Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to Eurograps Express. I'm your host, Neil David, and we are back once again to talk about all the exciting events on the British and European wrestling scene. Little bit of a different show this fortnight. I'm not going to talk, I would talk about Red Pro, obviously, but I'm not going to talk about a Red Pro show specifically. I'm not going to review any Red Pro matches. I feel like I do that every time. I feel like I want to shake things up a little bit and do something completely different. And as you'll see from the title, if you clicked on this, that I'm reviewing a progress show. And I know I said I'd never do that again, but you know what wrestlers are like. I'm the Eddie Dennis of podcasting. I say I'm going to retire, and I don't. I can't think of any other examples. I think he's the most famous wrestler retiree who didn't actually retire. I think it's Eddie Dennis. I can't think of anyone else. But I said I wouldn't review progress again because I felt like I'd be hate watching it. You know what I mean? I felt like that. Long-time listeners will know that the show that I stopped watching, I think it was night two of Super Strong Style 16, I want to say, something like that. A vague memory, because I remember I should have watched something else, and I didn't do it, so I'm assuming it's a Super Strong Style 16. And it was Cara Noir against Spike Trevain, the main event, and it was one of the most offensive wrestling matches I've ever seen. And I know that sounds like hyperbole. And I know that to a lot of people, they'll jump on that and they'll say, oh, you're exaggerating. But if you're like me, you listen to Eurograps Express, you love wrestling as much as I do. And those people who love wrestling know that that match was an abomination. It was an insult to professional wrestling. And I just thought, I can't do this anymore. I don't want to do it. I feel a certain responsibility to cover things on the show. Not responsibility, that's the wrong word, but I can't just be positive all the time. You know, I can't be someone who only ever talks about things that are good. It's important that we're critical about significant things, but I'm not going to go out of my way to watch things that I know I'm going to hate. Progress 160 came along, and I'll talk about this more later, but I thought they did a really good job of promoting that show, and I thought the card looked really good, and I watched it actually thinking, I'm not going to review it. I'm not going to talk about it on the show. But it seems stupid to waste it, doesn't it? So I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to tell you now that one of the matches on the show was the worst match I've seen this year. One of the matches was one of the worst things I've seen in a long time. Probably more than a year. Now, if you're looking at the card of Progress 160, you might be thinking, which match is he talking about? But I'll tell you something, dear listener, you're going to have to stick around and find out. Let's start off with a bit of news to get us started. And obviously, we can't start this show without talking about the death of Absolute Andy. WXW's Absolute Andy. It just seems to come out of nowhere, didn't it? An absolute shock. I think I'm not going to do an obituary here. I'm not the person to do that. I'm not a WXW expert by any means. And there are plenty of other people, you know, your Ian Hamiltons, your Alan Forrells, people like that, who can do a much better job of that than me. And I'll leave them to do it. What I will say is that I think for anybody in any field, whether that's creative, professional, whatever field you're in, the respect of your peers is something that is very hard to come by. And when people do gain the respect of the peers, it's something that we should look at. And look at the outpouring of love for Absolute Andy that came after that announcement. You know, everybody was tweeting about it and saying lovely things about the man. And it was far and wide as well. You know, obviously lots of people that he worked with in WXW, over to AEW in America, to Hiroshi Tanahashi over in Japan, and a real worldwide outpouring of respect. And I think it would be amiss of me not to say that I've seen that and we've seen that, and obviously send some love to his family, both his real family and his WXW family as well, because that feels like a big one, doesn't it? I mean, Absolute Andy was a huge part of that great run of WXW, you know, the 2016 onwards run, where it felt like such an integral part of wrestling fandom. It felt, you know, the big weekends that they did. I mean, like I say, I was watching from afar in a lot of ways because I'm not really a big, you know, I don't speak to people, you know. I kind of keep myself to myself. But you saw the pictures and the videos of everybody going to those shows and those huge events that they did. And Absolute Andy was central to a lot of those. And there's been memories going around of his match against Brian Danielson that I watched, and obviously his carrot win and his run with the belt and all that business. And it's really interesting to think about WXW, because they really feel like a proper promotion, don't they? And I know that might sound a little bit silly, but I hope you know what I mean, in that even like a RevPro who book great stories and have guys that they use, WXW feel like their own thing. They don't feel like they bring guys in. It feels like they have WXW guys, and Absolute Andy's one of the big names in that group of people. He's often kind of synonymous, isn't he, with WXW? You know, you think of guys like him, Bobby Guns and Ilya, you know, the list can go on and on and on, but just guys who, you know, obviously Walter, you know, whatever, just guys that you think of as being part of that movement, and he was absolutely part of it. So a real tragic loss. Let's talk about a little bit of business. Now, I don't do business very often. I think it's important business. I'm not someone who gets bored by it necessarily. I just, my interest, and I think your interest, if you listen to this, tend to lie in the more creative side of things. But every now and then, things come along and you can't ignore it. And the big thing that's happened this fortnight is AEW All In 2024 has gone on sale. It's happening at a similar time, the bank holiday weekend, on August 25th, a Sunday. It's down in that Wembley again. And it was really difficult to read the buzz about the show. And we were talking about it in the Discord, the Eurograps Express Room of the Voices of Wrestling Discord, which I always say this, if you're not in, get in there. I pride myself on it being the friendliest room and the whole server. So, you know, I would absolutely recommend you getting in there. And we were trying to read the buzz before the tickets went on sale. And it feels like, or it felt like, nobody was going to go. And I'm very wary of, you know, Twitter and Discords, and they kind of become a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, don't they? A bit of a circle, you know, because naturally I do a podcast and people who come into my Discord, generally speaking, are going to be people who I'm going to get on with. You know, I'm not big enough, obviously, to attract the haters yet. Although I do get a few of my DMs. I do, like, get a few DMs that I just have to ignore. But yeah, generally, we're going to be on the same wavelength, aren't we? We're going to be on the same page. And it felt like hardly anybody was going and there wasn't any buzz. If you remember to the, think back to the first All In when the tickets went on sale, there was this mad scramble for hotel rooms. It felt like people were saying that they weren't going, if that makes sense. That they announced they weren't going, you know, or life's got in the way, or I've already got this weekend, or whatever. People had to say, look, I'm not going to go. This time, kind of feels like the other way around, doesn't it? It feels like I'm seeing people say, do you know what? I am going to go, actually. I will go again. I thought it was all right last time. I had a good time and saw people. I'm going to go again. I mean, I'm not going, I have to say. And maybe that's coloured part of my opinion on it, that I'm essentially at the point now where I'm going to wait and see what Red Pro do and probably just go to that show. I don't really feel the need to go to another All In. And there's lots and lots of reasons for that. One is the amount of money that you would have to spend to enjoy it. Now, the first time it happened, it felt like an event, didn't it? It felt like a huge thing. And for me, a big part of going was to experience being there. And to, it felt like the biggest thing in the world, in the wrestling world, in certainly the European wrestling world, ever. I mean, it literally was, wasn't it, in terms of ticket sales? And I didn't want to miss out on that feeling. I didn't want to sit at home when that was on. Will that feeling be the same the second time round? Well, no. It's the law of diminishing returns, isn't it? It's not something that you can repeat and keep that same level of excitement for. There's also the fact that AEW kind of stinks. And I've always been a fan of AEW. And, you know, some of my best matches of the year are going to be from that company. I mean, Strickland against Hangman was phenomenal. And I'm not a big deathmatch guy, generally speaking. I like the good ones, you know. I'm like most people, I think, that it's not a genre or a subject that I gravitate towards, but when a good one comes along, I really get into it. But I'm not interested in the Bro Chacho stuff and kangaroo kicks. I think MJF stinks. I think sports entertainment stinks. And as much as he can shout, Tony, put your money where your mouth is, I've kind of took that the other way. And I know people are getting a little bit overboard with this. You know, I think the problem with the internet is that people think you're feeling one emotion or the other, and you feel whatever emotion you're feeling it to a 10 out of 10 degree. And I am a little bit annoyed by that quote from Tony Khan about put your money where your mouth is. I do feel a bit strange because I spent hundreds of pounds going to London to watch All In. So I literally did put my money where my mouth was. I wanted an alternative mainstream wrestling company. I wanted big shows in the UK. I put my money where my mouth is and went to see it. And you gave me garbage. You gave me rubbish. You didn't give me professional wrestling. And I want professional wrestling. It feels like, you know, I think back to that show. And maybe this is part of it. I just didn't really enjoy the wrestling at All In One. You know, I went back and watched the Punk Samoa Joe match and they're doing Hulk Hogan spots. And I'll never forget sitting in my seat during that main event and thinking it was one of the worst matches I'd ever seen. Just a terrible, terrible match for terrible sports entertainment. And looking round and just thinking, everybody would sort of be with me, that people would look bored, people would be on the phones, and everyone seemed to really love it. And that moment of just thinking, I mean, I've not really watched Dynamite since, you know, that because I had that moment of thinking, this isn't for me anymore. And it feels so strange, doesn't it, that the whole point of AEW and what it was built on was this idea that it was going to be for the professional wrestling fan. And it was going to be, it was going to prove a point that professional wrestling could be successful outside of the WWE's kind of tropes and things. And they've ended up just doing WWE tropes. So maybe that was why when the tickets came on sale, I didn't expect much movement, but they've sold 36,000 tickets. They've set up for 48, according to WrestleTix, by the way, on Twitter. So obviously, you know, great, great resource, great follow. They've set up for 48,000 and they've sold 36,000. Already, if this show doesn't sell another ticket, it's a huge, huge success. A huge success. And I don't think I would have predicted that necessarily. I would have expected it to have sold maybe half that by now. I would have expected people to kind of feel the way I felt. I think a big part of it, I'm fairly sure it was Chris, friend of the show, Chris, who was posting ticket pictures of his seats, and he was like behind a camera plinth, like a camera arm, you know, the big ones that go around. I felt like I couldn't really, I mean, I couldn't see what was going on. I was so far back, and the screens were kind of small, so it was more like I was experiencing the atmosphere. I feel like I'd enjoy the show a lot more at home. I don't really want to be part of the big crowds. And the crowds were managed really well. They had like a traffic light system for leaving, and you felt like you were moving pretty steadily. The, you know, the train station wasn't packed and all that business. But it just felt a bit like I don't... It would take something special to get me back, is what I'm saying. It would take a match that I would consider to have the potential best match of all time. And the frustrating thing about AEW is that they could book that tomorrow. Look at that roster. They could put on the greatest match of all time tomorrow. And the fact that they didn't want to do that in Wembley, because that was the big thing, wasn't it, from last time? If you remember, I was convinced that not only would Tony want to put on this great show, he'd want to put on a show with 80,000 people in an arena and put on solid, good professional wrestling that potentially ends up being one of the greatest things of all time. And he didn't want to put on the greatest wrestling show of all time. He wanted to put on a sports entertainment show. And he did that, and the people who went loved it. But that's not me, and that's not you, I don't think, either. So if you want to go and do your sports entertainment, go and do it. I'll put my money where my mouth is, and I'll spend it somewhere else. Apparently things are changing. You know, they said on the flagship that Joe Lanza's article got everywhere, and you know, people are listening to it, and there's going to be some changes, but it's going to have to be one of those. I'll believe it when I see it. I'm not spending all that money and time getting down to that London to watch that again, to watch sports entertainment again. I'm just not prepared to do it. You know, you're thinking, you're expecting me to have to mess with the tube, to queue up, to stand up for hours, to give up a holiday potentially. I'll do it. I will absolutely do it. But I want to see something special. But surprising ticket sales. Talking about ticket sales, there some of the tickets getting a little bit of buzz on Twitter for the wrong reasons. Repro, London Uprising, they're performing at Crystal Palace, the National Sports Centre, which I believe is about a 2,000-seat venue. Obviously, WrestleTix haven't got an update on their ticket sales directly, but you can go on the website and have a look and see what the map is, and it does not look like it's doing well. It really doesn't look like it's doing well. It's kind of hard to sit and talk and think about reasons why that might be the case without slipping into your wrong kind of weather, you know, circuses in town, kind of excuses, really. It's that age-old thing, isn't it, that if people wanted to go and watch it, they'd go and watch it. There are a lot of tickets still available. You could basically sit, apart from front row, you could basically sit anywhere you want. We could sort of shoot into the wind about reasons why that might be. It's on December 16th. It's, you know, it's very difficult to get people to spend money that time of year, I guess. I mean, certainly for a travelling fan, I mean, that's why I won't be going. I just have to spend 30 quid buying my nephew a Peppa Pig rocket, and it's rubbish. It just arrived in the post and it looks pants. It just doesn't look good at all. So I haven't got the money to go and spend getting down to Crystal Palace National Sports Centre because I've wasted it on him. The minimum you're going to pay is £30 a ticket to be right at the back, quite far away. I would say if you want a decent ticket, you're looking at 50 quid, which is not cheap. You know, for a travelling fan, you're going to be looking at a hotel. And also, I did wonder, as criticised as York Hall gets, and I know a lot of that's down to the security and the bar staff. I mean, the bar staff wouldn't really bother me. Like, I don't drink at wrestling shows. I don't really drink anyway, to be honest. I don't drink at wrestling shows. The security thing apparently is getting better. But if I was going to go to a big Rev Pro show, I kind of want to go at York Hall. It feels like their home, doesn't it? And I'm wondering if Crystal Palace is 2,000 seats. I mean, York Hall, I think, is it like 1,200, 1,300? I don't know. It feels weird, doesn't it? I feel like I'd want to be. Like, Copper Bowl's different because you go into, you know, 3,000, 4,000. You know, you're really going way above your York Hall numbers. And it felt like a special thing to do, you know, just do that once a year. But I wonder, this feels like a bit of an experiment that might be going wrong. I don't know. You know, it might be as simple as they're getting the venue really cheaply and it's worth doing. But just looking at how many empty seats there's going to be if it keeps up, we've still got 11 days left. So it's a week on Saturday. So there's still time. But, you know, I'm not overly hopeful for it. But it's a shame because you look at the card. I mean, Oku versus Gibson, I think, is going to be a great match. Osprey versus Kidd is going to be brilliant. The way those two are going to build that match is great. You've got Jacobs versus Ishii, which I don't know if that's going to be my match of the year. It's certainly the best match I've ever seen live by a long way. It's getting match of the year buzz. You know, then you've got Mills against Slater. It's not a drawing match, that, but that'll be a great match. I mean, you got Seven against Volador Jr., but that's not a go-away heat match, is it? That's go for a wee match, you know. Like, it's just like a go to the bathroom, get yourself a drink match. I think the card looks great. I really do. I'm excited for it. Osprey Kidd and Jacobs Ishii, in particular, I think are going to be fantastic matches. All-time, you know, late match of the year run matches, you know, that level. Not great for RevPro or great. I mean, RevPro don't operate in that world anyway, do they? I remember when we broke down at the start of last year, the matches, like the best matches, and RevPro were up there with any other promotion. They smashed WWE out the park for having pure match quality. Match quality is not a concern. I don't know what it is. It's strange, isn't it? If you've got any ideas, let me know. Like I say, get in the Discord. I'm a bit posh then. Get in the Discord and let me know what you think. Anyway, that's the news. That's what's going on at the minute. I suppose we should talk about some wrestling. Let's talk about Progress Chapter 160. I talked briefly at the start of this about how I vowed never to watch Progress. And obviously there's a dramatic element to that. And, you know, trying to entertain a little bit, I suppose, and go a bit of hyperbole. But that was kind of genuine. I realised that after that Trevet-Noir match, kind of reminded me of a really important turning point in my life, if you can bear with me. I remember driving home one Tuesday. I was driving home from work and I can remember the junction that I was at as I was driving home. And I had something in my head. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I thought, oh, I might do this tonight. And I remembered that because it was Tuesday, I couldn't do whatever that thing was. I had to watch Raw. It was Tuesday. I had to watch Raw. This is about 10 years ago. And I remember driving a couple more junctions and stopping at another set of lights. And I had this epiphany of, I don't have to watch Raw. And for the first time in a long, long time, probably since I was a teenager, I didn't watch Raw. And I felt like that after that Progress show. I watched them for a long time out of obligation more than anything. And a lot of it was because covering British wrestling for Voices of Wrestling, you're kind of obliged to keep up with things. And I have been keeping up with Progress, you know, the storylines and things, watching the big matches, things like that. But it was at the point where I realised that they were gone so left field, so far away from what we consider wrestling, and so into this sports entertainment, weird kind of, almost like a social club. And there was always an element of that to a certain extent, that it was something that I always found really difficult to engage with, the idea of the just three mates and we're all mates at this show and we're all here to have a good time and we're all here to, because we were a community and all that business. And I don't relate to that. I mean, that might be a fault within me, that you might think that's ridiculous, but my loyalty and my attendance at a show is driven by good wrestling. I don't want to make friends with the person sat next to me. I'll happily chat to them. I love now, since I've been doing this podcast, that every show I go to, I end up talking to a couple of people, like people that I've met through doing this podcast, through Twitter, through Discord, you know, shaking a couple of hands and having a chat with just with cool people who I've admired for years before I even did the podcast, you know, critics who I've followed. And that's great, but really my loyalty is to wrestling. And it felt like over the years, wrestling became less and less important to progress. It became more, when they went to, they did the WWE deal and all that business, it sort of chipped away. And then the final nail in the coffin was after the sale, the Trevet Noir match. I just thought, this isn't what it was. What I'm trying to say here is in a sort of a long-winded way, is that there was a time when progress were a big part of my appreciation of British wrestling. I didn't miss a Manchester show. I didn't miss them for years and years. If there was a show up north, I went without fail. And obviously the pandemic and speaking out and all those things, they were affected by that as much as anybody, but they never came back. They were never able to get any kind of excitement going. And a lot of it as well was, I felt like I got sick of being berated by John Briley on a microphone when I went to a show. Do you know what I mean? It felt like friendly and very unfriendly at the same time. It felt like a club that I wasn't part of. If that makes any sense to you. So it would have taken, I think, a real impressive thing to get me back into progress, to get me tempted to watch a progress show. And they did. This show that I watched, Chapter 160, it wasn't a slow week. I could have watched, I have watched, but we could be reviewing Red Pro shows that I enjoyed. We could be looking at all sorts of things. But I watched Chapter 160, Vendetta, in the Electric Ballroom because I was genuinely drawn to that show. There was a few reasons. One, the card. And that's always going to be the thing that draws you. I know that sounds like I'm not, you know, I'm teaching my grandma to suck eggs and all that, but they've got Ricky Knight Jr. against Luke Jacobs and Leon Slater against Connor Mills. That's two matches that make me go, yes, I want to see that. In the simplest way you can draw people to a wrestling show, that I felt that feeling. There were matches announced that I wanted to see. And you can't get any purer, simpler, straightforward drawing, booking ability than that. But another reason why I wanted to watch it is because I was watching the social media and I was watching the videos that they were putting up on Twitter. And I felt like I wanted to see the end of this story. This show had a Mass versus title match between Spike Trevet and Kid Lykos. And I thought they explained the Lykos history brilliantly. Now, let's put that into context a little bit, because Spike Trevet is by no means my favourite worker. I really do not like Spike Trevet as a wrestler. I don't like his work. I don't like his character. I think he looks at wrestling and has an ethos for wrestling that I do not share in the slightest. I really, really, really do not enjoy at all Spike Trevet's work. I really don't. Kid Lykos, I am very hit and miss with. when Kid Lykos wants to actually wrestle, I really, really enjoy it and get into it. But a lot of the time he doesn't. He wants to be silly. But when they showed the video of the first time CCK were booked in Progress, and again, Chris Brooks, we've got different ethos when it comes to wrestling. We don't see wrestling in the same way, I don't think. But watching that video and watching the roof come off the place and thinking about a time when a tag team like CCK could build excitement and a following, and they could turn up in the big promotion in the country and have that excitement. And that was palpable. I've got those feelings again, you know, that time when things were exciting. And they sold me the show. I thought the way they were talking about Kid Lykos, because he's a great wrestler, Kid Lykos, they sold me the show. And I wanted to watch it. So I did. And as I said at the start, I was being a little bit obtuse, really. But I meant what I said, that this show has one of the worst matches I've ever seen on it. So let's go through the matches then. Let's go through the card and talk about what I did see. Because weirdly, the two matches that I was the most excited about, as he shuffles his papers like Dave Meltzer, were the opening two. The first one was Ricky Knight Jr. against Luke Jacobs. And this was presented so, so well. And in fact, actually, before we get started, we should talk about the presentation. The presentation is excellent. The way the cameras work, the way they smoothly go to videos, the way you can hear what the commentators are saying, the production, I thought, for an indie promotion is fantastic. And I not even for an indie promotion, for any promotion. It's up there with the best of them. And I don't understand why Andy Quilden isn't looking at what they're doing and trying to hire the people who do Progress and getting them on board. Now, I can't believe I'm not even talking about Red Pro and I'm still slagging off Red Pro's production. But anyway, starting with Jacobs versus RKJ. This started off brilliantly. They just started punching each other and then doing Saito suplexes and backdrops onto each other's heads. And they did that for about 3 minutes of just dropping each other on the head over and over and over and over. And I will be dead before I don't find that exciting. And you know what? You can be a little safety little nerd and you can go on your Twitter and you can say, oh, don't drop each other on your head. Don't be that person. Wrestlers, there's nothing up there anyway. Drop each other on your head. And I loved it. I got into it. You know, they dropping each other on head and then collapsing afterwards. There were a couple of moments in this where it erred on the panto. It erred on the Progress a little bit. Like, RKJ got his nuts grabbed and there was a few sort of comedy faces and that kind of thing. There was a bit where RKJ did the standing suplex thing. You know, everyone counts the vertical suplex. He doesn't do the drop. And I think he held him up for like 40-odd seconds. And it felt a little bit at odds to me because it started off brilliantly with this great bit of violence that, by the way, both wrestlers absolutely excel at. And both wrestlers would be brilliant just going out and smashing each other's faces in. But then there was a few of those panto-y kind of sports entertainment-y spots that I don't know if they really worked together. But the ending was great. And it was a classic big match closing. This was 4 stars on the nose. I thought this was a really good match, a great match even. You know, not going to be the best match of the month or anything like that. But when you sit there and think about a best match, a good match you've seen recently, it'd be one that comes up. And I know that kind of sounds like I'm damning it with faint praise, but I'm really not. I'm being genuine. I thought this was a really entertaining, great little match. And it adds to a resume of Jacobs in particular, who's had easily the best year of his career. I know he won't qualify for best rookie, but I think most improved for me. Like, genuinely, I would vote for Luke Jacobs as most improved if I voted in the Observer Newsletter Awards. I really do think he is the most improved wrestler this year. I think he's been great. Then we had Connor Mills against Leon Slater. And this show's had a little bit of a funny thing with Connor Mills. We've kind of flipped, haven't we, back and forth on him. But he's entered a new stage of his career now. And I think everybody should be booking Connor Mills regularly. I think Connor Mills should be working absolutely everywhere, especially against people like Leon Slater. Because Connor Mills is a brilliant veteran. And you could see here the way Mills was leading, the way he bumped like an absolute hero so often in this. You really got the sense that Mills was putting Leon over in a big, big way. And don't get me wrong, Leon Slater's great himself. He doesn't necessarily need someone there to put him over, but he's like 19 or something, isn't he? He just needs sometimes to wrestle more experienced wrestlers who can help him pace things a little bit better. And I'm not saying he can't pace good matches. I'm not saying he's a high flyer who can't control himself, because he's absolutely not. Leon Slater is incredibly accomplished for his experience level. But what he needs more than anything is just reps with good wrestlers, and Mills is absolutely perfect for that. And it was weird because I ended up finishing this match thinking, well, that's 2-for-2. This was probably 3¾. I'm watching this show thinking, do you know what? We might get back into progress. If this is how they're presenting their matches, because these were two proper wrestling matches. You know what I mean? There was none of the progress tone about them, really, apart from them little spots that I talked about before. This was progress back to being interesting and good. Then Tate Mayfair came out. Tate Mayfair is an interesting one because I've seen him wrestle quite a bit in places like Chaos, and he's getting a bit of work now in a few different places. And he's a wrestler that I think, when he gives in to his worst instincts, really diminishes himself and takes away from what he can do. Because I think he's a much, much more accomplished wrestler than it might first appear. When he tones things down, he's great. But when he's at progress and it feels like he might just be given a mic and wound up and told to go on, the promo is so cheesy and corny. And it's just heel 101 stuff, like everyone should love me and I'm the... And it just doesn't land at all. It feels like he's doing a character. It feels like he sat down and thought, oh, what do heels do? And he's come up with a list of things and he just does them. And then he had a match with Paul Robinson. Paul Robinson is very, very over with the progress crowd. It's not really over with me. There were bits in this match that I thought were okay, but it's not a match to sort of go out your way to see, I don't think.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it, and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Now, when I said this show has the worst match I've ever seen this year, maybe not ever, but, you know, in contendership, it wasn't actually Lana Austin and Rob Drake against Charles Crowley and Alexa Falcon. Although, I've been putting off saying this for a while because I used to be quite a fan of Lana Austin. She's Northern wrestler, so works at a lot of promotions that I go to, you know, small promotions. And she's always been quite prominent in those promotions. And I always felt like there was a little bit more in her than we were seeing, than is possible to see, I suppose, in the training school shows and that kind of thing. But it feels like the character that she plays in Progress, it's go-away heat for me. It's one of those where you kind of feel like you have to really reiterate that I get what the character is. I get that the character is supposed to be annoying, but I don't like the character because I find it annoying. And not annoying in a way that I want to see her get a comeuppance. Annoying in a way that I want her to leave the screen and I never want to see it again. I never want to see this Lana Austin character. It does nothing. It's just, again, corny, cookie cutter heel. Character with absolutely no thought put into it. Writing is rewriting. That's what they tell you whenever you go away and try and do something creative. And it feels like so many of these Progress wrestlers have just thought of the first character that comes into the red and just gone with it. And I've not watched a Lana Austin match for months, and I'm seeing the same stuff, making someone pull a chair out so she can climb up into the ring, and it's just terrible. Like, it's grating. And Charles Crowley and Alexis Falcon, I have to say, we're actually all right here. I've never been a huge Charles Crowley fan. The drama stuff is, you know, that dramatic match he had last show is really not for me. And I think that there's a certain point with Crowley where I just have to accept that he is a wrestler who, again, I've said this a few times this show, who sees wrestling in a completely different way to me. And I'm never going to see eye to eye with that. And it's just going to be something that we have to sort of agree to disagree on, I suppose. Not that he knows who I am, but you know what I mean. But actually, as a babyface, it worked a lot better. Because he just sort of did a little bit of a dance, a little bit of a sort of a smiley face, a little bit of a, you know, the character was there. It was still the Charles Crowley character. He was just toned down. And it actually worked quite well, I thought. And I came away from this match thinking, Charles Crowley, I started to see what maybe other people see in him a little bit. I still don't think it's my type of wrestling, and I'm never going to get on with it. But it wasn't insultingly cringe like it often is. I think that's what it was. It was Charles Crowley without the awful, cringy kind of behaviour. So I could enjoy it a lot more. You know the sort of thing. I've seen him at, what was that show? Was it Catch Pro? Something like that. And he did some really egregious long mime thing. He had two mimes with him and it just seemed to go on forever and be so self-indulgent and wasn't even particularly well done. I've seen him do a routine with balloons and things and he felt very, yeah, self-indulgent, I think is the word, and not particularly entertaining. But this wasn't, you know, he was, like I say, he was good. The match itself, there wasn't really much to report. It was just kind of bad heel work. But to be honest with you, the crowd loved it. The crowd loved this more than they seemed to love RKJ and Luke Jacobs smacking seven shades out of each other. And I think what that does then is speak to kind of a wrestling capital, doesn't it? And this isn't necessarily a criticism. It's just, not wrestling capital as in how much you know. Not that at all. Just you want different things from your wrestling. Like, there are plenty of people now who seem to be really into this WWE resurgence with the Bloodline stuff. And I mean, to me and you, we look at that and just think that's absolutely terrible. But it seems like so many people enjoy it, and maybe it's just a different wrestling ethos. We we are now at the match that I think is quite possibly the worst match I've seen this year. In fact, I know it's the worst match I've seen this year. This match was absolutely terrible. It was Warren Banks against Gene Money. The story of this match was Warren Banks has decided to retire. He's decided to stop wrestling. He's decided that he wants his last match to be against a really good friend and a man who helped train him, Gene Money. And actually, I'm watching the video package, which again was really well done. And I was enjoying it. I was getting into it. And I like that kind of simple story. You know, just a guy saying, look, I'm going to retire. It's not a, if I lose, I'll retire or anything like that. It's just, I'm going to retire at the end of this match. And I want to go out with my best friend. Win or lose, I don't even mind. I just want to go out and have one last match. And Gene Money was a little bit shocked by it all. He was like, you're not ready to retire. And he made this big thing about how, you know, you don't have to, you can keep going. I mean, I think it's a work, by the way. If it looks like a work and smells like a work. If it's his actual retirement, then they've done a really bad job of it because it stinks of a work. So they had this match and they come out and, you know, the crowd are so into it. And it's a bit melodramatic. And this match, for me, epitomises a huge problem with progress in particular, I think, but wrestling in this country in general. And I sound like an old man shaking my fist at the cloud. And if you can allow me to do it, I'm going to do it because I really think this match was absolute garbage and is indicative of so many problems that you see on so many wrestling cards from the top right down to the bottom on the scene. And what it is a fundamental lack of understanding of the story that you have presented and are trying to tell. I didn't invent this retirement story. I've not read between the lines and filled in little gaps, little jigsaw pieces to make it more interesting for me. That is explicitly the story that's being told. Now, you're an intelligent wrestling watcher because you listen to Eurograps Express. You know your wrestling. What would that match look like to you? And I've not talked about this match yet. I've not talked about a single spot, a single feeling, a single emotion. What does that match look like to you? It's competitive, isn't it? It's maybe a bit catch as catch can. Maybe there's lots of holds and, you know, outsmarting each other. Maybe halfway through, you know, one of them takes it a little bit too far and it becomes genuinely competitive and a little bit heated. But at the end, one of them gets the pinfall and it's a handshake and a hug at the end and a raised arm. Or maybe you want to go the other way and it lights a fire under Warren Banks and he decides he's not going to retire and he wants to fight Gene Money because he crossed a line and it's personal now. Or maybe he realises that being in the ring with his best friend was the best thing that's ever happened to him and he wants to go and enter tag team tournaments across the continent and relive, he gave him back what he felt like at the start, because they're saying on commentary, they're telling you all the way through that Warren Banks doesn't have to retire. He's choosing to retire. He's nervous that that next bump that he takes is going to be his last. They're telling the story that it might go either way. Did Progress do any of that? I'm not saying they're the best ideas, by the way. They're your standard ideas, aren't they? That's kind of where you start. You get those ideas and you think, we might do this, we might do that, we might do the other. Did Progress do any of those things? What they did was take this massive bucket of melodrama and just throw it all over this match. All over this match. Gene Money at one point was screaming at Warren Banks as he did a brutal Irish whip and garrotted him on the top rope. Like, this is... He did a move designed to choke him, to nearly take the man's head off, and screamed, "Why are you making me do this?" with his head in his hands. And I thought, Gene, my friend, nobody is making you do this. You could do this match without doing that spot and tell the story that you started to tell. But they didn't. What they did is they started telling a story and then said, right, what do we need to do to make this as melodramatic as possible? Do you know what it reminds me of? This is a weird analogy. But do you know the new Star Trek films? Like the ones with Chris Pine as Captain Kirk. And you're watching those films and the story doesn't link with the action scenes because they've gone away and they've thought of this series of action scenes and thought of a story afterwards to link them together. And that's what this felt like. The action that I was seeing in the ring did not tell the story that you were trying to tell. And it was just stupid then. It was insulting. It was laughable. Why didn't they just wrestle? It genuinely got to the point where I didn't know if this was serious. The bit where Warren Banks is punching G Money on the floor and then putting his head in his hands as if to say, I don't want to do this. And at no point in this story have you ever set up any kind of stakes that he would have to wrestle like that. Just an absolute fundamental misunderstanding of what a story is. A complete inability by both of these wrestlers to tell a story in a wrestling ring. And that, my friends, is what makes wrestling what it is. Go and have a look at a great G1 match. Go and have a look at a great G1 match where they get 20 minutes in the ring and they tell a story from start to finish without a single promo, a single VT, anything. And they tell a story that makes sense. That's what good wrestlers could do, and this didn't do it. There was a bit at the end when, oh my word, just honestly, one of absolute comical overselling from G Money. Absolute comical overselling on this spear or something to the back, and then Warren Banks is, you know, doing the NXT staring at his hands. Just utter stupid. And then, do you know what happened? Here's another thing about storytelling. The actions that happen next should be related to the actions that have happened previously. You go through all that where they're going way over the top. Way, way, way more violent than they ever needed to be. But rather than react to that violence and say, hey, you've taken this too far now and we're going to make this a proper match, they're hugging in the middle of the ring. 1 minute, it's head in hands, you know, a damn spot, Lady Macbeth style soliloquy. Like an amateur dramatic performance. And the next minute, they're hugging in the ring. And at this point, despite the fact it's been pretty much 50-50 for the whole match, and Warren Banks has nearly won about four times, he decides that now it is time for me to fade away, for the curtain to close. And they hug in the middle of the ring. He holds his arm out, and G Money delivers the final spear, and it's 1-2-3 in a spot very reminiscent of the I'm Sorry I Love You Shawn Michaels Ric Flair thing, but even worse. Even worse. Genuinely the worst match of the year. The worst match of the year. And they didn't botch a spot. Not a thing went wrong in this match. And it was the worst match of the year. Anyway, next up, we had Bullet and Smoking Aces against Sanity. Axel Tischer, Big Damo, and Eric Young. They were kind of trying to play up Sanity as being a big deal. And I really like Axel Tischer. We've reviewed quite a lot of his matches over the years. Really enjoy his work. I don't really feel the need for a Sanity reunion. It's weird how, kind of, again, talking about that WWE thing, about how returns and reunions just feel like this really weird part of wrestling lexicon. And that when things come back, that we have to get excited, or when people reunite, we have to get excited. But in all honesty, what is your favourite Sanity moment? There aren't any, are there? Do you know what I mean? It's a weird thing to get excited about. And I think it's a bit of a shame here in this match, because, I mean, the match was fine. You know, it was inoffensive generally. There were some really good bits with spots onto chairs and some cool big spots. And I think my issue with it is, with this match, is Charlie Sterling. Oh, the Smoking Aces in general, I guess, but particularly Charlie Sterling. Because I think if Charlie Sterling never gets any further in wrestling, it'll be a bit of a shame. Because I think he is incredibly talented. I think he's the whole package. I think he's got the look. I think he's got the attitude. The problem, and you know, the skill as well. Let's not forget that. He's an incredibly talented wrestler. I think he really does jump off the page, Charlie Sterling. And this isn't a new opinion. This is something we've been talking about for a while, about how good Charlie Sterling is. The issue is, I think, that he's wrapped up in this progress stuff. And all the way through the match, it's panto, comical bits. Like, there's a bit where he slipped on the ropes and everyone chanted, "You messed up," and all that business. And it feels like if he were to go and wrestle, really wrestle and take his craft seriously, you know, actually go, "I want to be a good wrestler." And I can feel people's responses to that. And this idea that, you know, "I want to have fun," and, you know, this sports entertainment defense squad that we seem to come across quite a bit. Why don't people want to be good wrestlers? Charlie Sterling could be an amazing wrestler, but he's taking cheap rubbish shortcuts, and I really don't like it. Eric Young was good here. You know, there was a good exchange with him, but generally the match was just a little bit there, really. It felt like it was predicated a little bit too much on this Sanity reunion that, like I say, who really cares? You know, it's like when WWE did Edge and Rey Mysterio again, and everyone was supposed to be excited, and you kind of saw people online maybe pretending to be excited, but actually, I don't think it was genuine, you know. I don't really understand why anybody would be excited by Sanity returning. I don't get it. Next up, we had what maybe, apart from the Jacobs RKJ match, was the best match on the show, I thought. It's between those two. Well, that and this one. Kanji, Lizzie Evo, and Rio. Three-way for the women's title. I am a huge fan of Rio. I think it's been a while since I've seen her, and she has got significantly better. And I thought she was good to begin with. The way she comes to the ring, the way she carries herself, she feels like a competitor. Talking about wrestlers, she felt like a proper wrestler. You know, and same with Kanji and Lizzie Evo. They're three wrestlers that I like a lot. And this was really violent. You know, Kanji absolutely battered Lizzie Evo. That the two of them were... Lizzie's having a little bit of a late career resurgence. I mean, I don't know how old she is. She feels like she's been around for a while, but she's really entered that veteran stage now, and she's getting some really good bookings, and she deserves them, because I think she's doing some of the best work she's ever done. And I've always been a bit of a fan, but she just sort of gets it a little bit more. I thought her selling here was great. She made Kanji look brutal. Because Kanji's good, but I think sometimes her size kind of works against her, and she needs her opponent to really bump to get that sort of fighty style across. And Lizzie Evo was able to do it, and she was brilliant here. And obviously, this was really hard-hitting. A really good match. Usual three-way kind of caveats, you know, in the sense that one person's going to be on the outside where other people are selling and all that business. So there is a little bit of a caveat there with that. But with those caveats understood and in place, I think this is well worth watching. Eddie Dennis turned up after this one. He went on with himself about being hired and refired by WWE. Got a bit awkward when people chanted anti-WWE stuff for him. He did the usual thing that they're all doing, all these NXT UK people, of oh, I was frustrated working there and now I'm free and I want to wrestle. Well, Eddie Dennis, of all people, doesn't really get to say that because they fired him and he went back. So, you know, it's a little bit like... you know, I know it's a bit sort of gauche now, isn't it, to point it out. But when all these wrestlers go on and on about how, you know, they're flipping, you know, they're oh my word, I was so miserable there, and now I'm out, I can finally talk about wrestling. Like, you chose to go, man. Do you know what I mean? It's just, I just can't take it seriously. Eddie Dennis being back is not exciting. I feel the same way I did about him when he went back to Progress. I don't really care. To Repro. Next up, we had a really interesting match. We had Shigehiro Irie against Yoichi. Yoichi is Yoshiki Inamura from Noah. He's on some kind of excursion. Not a, like a young boy excursion. He's been around for ages, hasn't he? I think he's like 31 or something. I'm not a huge follower of modern day Noah. I'd watch like Kano matches, but I don't really know a great deal about him. But this was big boys slapping me. And it felt like, after a bit of a dirge, not so much the women's match, but because, I don't know, it felt like this was a different level of working from these two. This felt like two professional wrestlers having a professional wrestling match. And again, that could come across as damning with faint praise, but I really don't mean it to. It is actually very entertaining. I thought these certain spots that Irie does, like when he does that dive, he sort of sits his opponent on the apron and does a crossbody through the bottom rope. And he looks great. Absolutely brutal. You know, his big cannonballs that he does in different spots. Never been a huge Irie fan, generally speaking. I think that you kind of see what... If you won't watch one match every 6 months, you've kind of seen everything he's going to do in that 6 months. I know a lot of people really like him, though. So maybe he's one of those that I'm out to lunch on. Maybe I'm the outlier. I'm on the desert island, and that's fine sometimes. There's going to be... If everyone has that wrestler who everybody seems to love and you just don't get, you know... Adam Cole is my big one. I think he's a jag. I just don't get it. But plenty of people seem to absolutely love him, and sometimes you just got to accept that you might be wrong, and I might be wrong about Irie, but it is what it is. Match was really good. You know, again, with the Irie ceiling, just big, brutal guys having a fight. Okay. Then it's the headline, main event. Lycos versus Treve. And like I say, it feels like they did a brilliant job getting me to watch this show. Because it was really the opening two matches that got me interested. But you've got two wrestlers who I'm not a particular fan of, although I do like Lycos's serious work. I have to say that when he's not being silly and he's wrestling, I think his work recently has been really good. His Red Pro stuff recently has been great. Treve is a wrestler who I have never enjoyed. I just don't get his work at all. But the video package to this was so good. The way it was silent, and Treve ripped his mask off at the end of a match, and he you know, Lycos scrambles to cover his face and Trevay runs to the back. And like I say, when you think back of the history of Lycos and the way they've built into that, you know, the idea of him being this huge resurgent star and excuse me, feeling like he had a whole amazing career ahead of him and the injuries that he had and then coming back and coming up against Trevay and it feeling like this was a real big moment and the huge stakes of the title versus the mask and genuinely into it. And when Lycos came out, it felt big. Even though they clearly given out Lycos mask to the crowd and the Progress just couldn't stop themselves trying to engineer it and add a layer of artificiality to it like they do to everything. But Lycos was so good in his entrance and the way he presented himself that he overcame that. And it felt like something I was excited to see and couldn't wait to see. And then Trevay came out and it was the looks, the outfit, the music, all so corny, just weird. Like I don't get it. He doesn't come across as a real person. He comes across as a wrestler, as a sports entertainer, I should say. You know, that kind of, this is what heel wrestlers do, and this is a heel wrestler's entrance. And I felt like a bit of a fool, really. I felt bad for Lycos. I felt like, based on his entrance and the fact that he's potentially being unmasked, which he ended up being unmasked, I felt like he deserved a little bit more than this boring Spike Trevay character. And it could have been a lot more. Started off okay in terms of match, in terms of work, in terms of sort of match structure. You know, they were just hitting each other and it felt serious. It felt like a feud. And then they use fake glass. Trevay got a bottle out and smashed Lycos with it. And I'm not going to get into the Crimea River real glass or fake glass debate here. I never go in for the argument of you've never laced a pair of boots so you can't have an opinion. That's obviously nonsense. Anyone who argues that is an absolute idiot. And it's better, whenever he listens to a record or watches a film, better have no opinion on it. Because you've never been in a film and you've never made a record. You know, it's just a stupid argument. But what I will say is, I don't want to take a real bottle to the face. I obviously don't. The problem with this is, Spike Trevay had hid the bottles under the ring. And they were just clearly plain brown bottles. And it just screamed, prop. We've talked about kayfabe before, haven't we? That audiences have to participate in kayfabe. You have to pretend that what you're seeing is real. And I find the wrestling that I hate the most is wrestling that doesn't allow me to do that. Wrestling that shows me the cogs. Wrestling that shows me the mise-en-scene and the settings. And by having blatant fake glass, I'm not saying it should have been real glass. I don't want to get smashed in the face with real glass. What I'm saying is, there should have been no glass at all. It really felt like, again, overly dramatic, overly convoluted, just so slow. So much of this match, and this was a 37-minute match. Let me check on Cage Match. Yeah, 37 minutes and 44 seconds long, this match. And so much of the match was tables being moved around, chairs being set up, doors being set up in the corner, people looking under the ring for stuff, people going out behind the bar and getting out bins, people looking for drawing pins. And you're like, I have seen this match before. They at least had the respect for us not to get a trampoline out, which happened in the Spike in the Cara Noir match. But it just felt drawn out. It felt like I was watching things being rearranged. It felt quite often weak, this match. And that's a weird criticism when you're watching people being dropped on drawing pins and going through tables, because there were some great spots in this match, but there were also bits on the apron where Spike Trevet was going to try and pile drive Kid Lykos through the tables and couldn't really seem to lift him up. And that's not good. It's not a good look. And again, perhaps there's a level of them needing to go back to the drawing board and have a think about spots that would actually make sense and would actually look good. Spike Trevet, for some reason, brought out a fake tombstone. And there was a bit in this match where they did a tombstone onto a tombstone. And the commentary thought that was dead clever. What a fourth wall breaking moment that was. What a, you know, it's like, it was like poetry. It rhymed. But you can't rhyme a word with itself, can you? Tombstone doesn't rhyme with tombstone. And if you try and make it rhyme, you just look like a sausage. And it was just a really stupid spot. Again, slow, boring, gentle. The whole middle of the match felt like things being set up. There was a bit in this match that was so cringe, I felt my insides kind of shrivel up a little bit. And I'm not afraid of cringe. I'm not. You know, you've listened to this podcast before. Don't mind a cringy, cheesy joke. But when they got the drawing pins out, somebody started chanting ECW. Or EC Dub. And I don't know who that person was. And I apologise if you hear this. That was awful. And just when you thought that moment couldn't get any worse, Spike Trevet turns to the audience and says, "This isn't ECW. This is progress." And I thought, I need to turn the telly off. I actually stood up and walked away for a minute. I went and got a glass of juice to calm my nerves. I just thought, how deluded. And I know it's a work. I know wrestling's fake. Thank you. Before you go on my Discord and try and tell me. I know he's going to promote the company that he works for. It's supposed to be a heel. Isn't he supposed to hate the company, Spike Trevet? Or, you know, he's burning it down from the inside to expose the commentary team for the, what, you know what I mean? That's his sort of MO, isn't it? So it was just a weird moment anyway, even if it wasn't cringy. Lemon juice came out. This is, you know, this is something that seems to be a really weird thing that progress like. Whenever they have like thumbtacks, they get the they get the old lemon juice out, and it's because I understand that lemon juice in a cut hurts. I get it. I do understand it. Still stupid though, innit? Just dumb. Rubbish. Looks crap. Throwing lemon juice on a cut. It's just weird. And he was done completely straight-faced as well. It's not even like when they were doing it in the Luke Jacobs matches that it was this big like, oh my God, aren't we edgy? Which is bad enough on its own merit. But they were doing it with a straight face this time, which somehow made it worse. Then Bullet and Nick Riley come out and they threaten Kid Lykos too. And that's enough to almost, you know, throw Lykos off his game. And he gets thrown through a glass pane. He doesn't kick out straight away though. He's not prepared to kick out then. But he takes a few, I think, Ushigaroshis or whatever his finishing move is. Like a pedigree into a neckbreaker thing. I'm sure it's got a name. And he loses his mask. And, you know, Trevet looks introverted. He looks like, oh, I don't know if I went too far here. And he realises that Lykos has earned his respect. And they shake hands at the end as if, you know, everything we've just, the 37 minutes we've sat through was a waste of time. Really? And then actually, to his credit, Lykos unmasked and delivered a great real promo. So as much as I would rate this match maybe one star, I've actually come away from it feeling quite positive, because I think this unmasked Lycos could go on to do some really good stuff. And I'm actually, he's always been a talented wrestler, and I've not always, again, agreed with how he wrestles and the spots that he does and his approach to wrestling, but he's undeniably a talented wrestler. And I'm excited to see what he might actually go away and do. So that's Progress 106. Two matches at the start were good. The women's three-way was good. Everything else was absolutely abysmal. Don't watch it. So that's Progress 160. A bit of a hard show to kind of review, really, because for everything that was good about it, there was something equally bad. You know, it was a bit of a weird balancing act. So I think if you're a Progress watcher and, you know, you're like me, I think we need to cherry pick, don't we? I think sitting through whole shows is too much. I think one of the things that I didn't mention in the review that I found really difficult was the fact it was like 4.5 hours. And I think we're past that now. I think promoters have started to realise that that's only ever to the detriment of your wrestling show. And genuinely, if it's a big show, if it's a huge, huge show, like, you know, Uprising is probably going to be 4 hours. It's a big show. Copperbox was 4 hours. It's a big show. If it's your standard day-to-day Progress chapter like this was, I don't think it needs to be 4.5 hours long. I really don't. I think that's only ever going to take away from what you're trying to achieve. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. The focus of that is going to be Uprising. That'll have happened by then. So if you're watching it and you're watching it live, I will be too. So get in the Voices of Wrestling Discord. There's a Eurograps Express room that I, as I always say, I pride myself on that being the friendliest room in the whole server. So if you want to chat with people who like watching European wrestling, that's the place to do it. I am going to be back in 2 weeks' time, and have a good one. Catch you in a bit.
Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.